until 11, you're listening to Mitchell Dye with Mitchell's Front Page on 94.7 The Pulse.
And at 10:31, which is 29 to 11, it's a very good morning to James Taylor, Associate Editor of the much-loved Surf Coast Times newspaper. James, good morning.
That's nice of you, Mitchell. Good morning and happy Easter.
Well, happy Easter to you too. It's Easter Tuesday and I thought we'd be down here in Apollo Bay clearing up the aftermath of the Easter break, but no, it's absolutely bustling here, and in fact there's even a traffic jam in the main street right in front of us outside the Apollo Bay Bakery. Oh no, there's people tooting, there's road rage. No, it's not good.
Yeah, well, that's, I guess this goes to what happens when Anzac Day falls so close to Easter Monday. A lot of people may have decided to have a few extra days of annual leave and have a very, very long weekend.
Now, I love the Surf Coast Times newspaper, and I was reading and I turned to the letters to the editor section of this week's edition. Happened to see my name there, which was nice.
Yeah. You aren't adverse to publicity, Mitchell, given your appearance as a singular appearance, I should say, a Q&A.
That's right. But no, nice letter there from Denise. And, yeah, I mean, the thing I'll just point out again, as I did yesterday, was, one, we had Libby Coker on in the second hour, who spoke for even longer than Sarah, if you count the minutes. And number two was, in the interview I did with Sarah, Sarah accused me of repeating Bill Shorten's lies. So I've got Sarah saying I'm a Labour-biased person, and I've got Denise saying I'm Liberal-biased. You just couldn't win, could you?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, unless you're going to take the approach of the ABC, so let's not talk about the ABC's bias, or not, otherwise we need a couple of hours to thrash that one out.
Yes.
Unless you're going to take their approach of having sort of minute-by-minute equality, so Labour gets 10 minutes, so Liberals get 10 minutes, there's always going to be people pointing at you saying that you lean one way or the other.
Now, the federal campaign, I saw that you made a bit of a cameo appearance in a video on Scott Morrison's either Instagram or Facebook. He was bowling a bowl down the green at Torquay, and it actually was quite a nice shot. It hit the jack from what I could see. But who was there in that video watching the bowl go down? It was yours, or you. It was great.
Yeah. I have an unfortunate appearance of unintentionally photobombing prime ministers whenever they come to town. I'm not sure which prime minister started with it, but it was Kevin Rudd or Malcolm Turnbull, but invariably whenever the Prime Minister and the media circus, and by the media circus I mean the bus full of TV cameras and the photographers and journos comes to town, I'm invariably there taking pictures as well as writing the story. So I tend to forget that there's live coverage of this thing going around the nation. So people always message me the next day and say, "Oh, I just saw you on television." I was like, "Oh, again, it's happened again." Because I was clearly more interested in getting the shot, which we'll see on the front cover of last week's Surf Coast Times of the Prime Minister sending that ball down with Sarah Henderson standing right behind him, and less worried about whether I was going to get on TV that night.
But the point is, as well, it doesn't quite look very natural when, say, you're the Prime Minister trying to have a conversation with some pensioners or some local bowlers, and then in the background you've got all these TV cameras and big boom mics recording everything.
Yeah, there's a certain amount of artificiality that comes with the campaign, especially, but certainly when the Prime Minister in general heads around and you've got a whole pack of media people with him. Because it's very hard for anyone to get close because the TV cameras are right there in his face and the photographers are right there in his face. And the whole pack just sort of shuffles around together. So I can understand how it doesn't seem, I understand why it doesn't seem very natural, because it's not.
Yeah, well, it certainly isn't. And the Prime Minister does seem to be at home, whether it's, and Denise, just turn off the radio now, but he does seem to be at home, whether it's playing darts or bowling things down the green or playing snooker, whatever it is, he seems to be at home and seems to be a better campaigner, at least than Malcolm Turnbull. But in the interest of balance, some people would say, well, you need more skills to be Prime Minister than just being able to throw a dart or hit a jack in bowls.
That's right. I've heard it said somewhere that the Prime Minister is trying very hard to get to nail the daggy dad outlook in terms of I'm just a suburban dad. I love my kids. I love my sport.
Baseball,
I love going to
cap.
Church. As we found out when he invited the media into his church over the weekend, and I love playing sports. So I'm good with darts, good with pool. I think he played pool at a nursing home in Grovedale.
Yes.
As part of his trip down to the Geelong region last week. And it's all just part of the image, which is why you see him wearing hats, baseball caps everywhere he goes. I think it's not a coincidence. I think it's quite a deliberate media strategy.
Oh, without a doubt. And I was reading as well, one journalist pointed out that he's been visiting Victoria for 3 days, Scott Morrison, but he hasn't visited the seat of Dunkley yet. So that maybe indicates that the government hasn't written off Corangamite, but perhaps they have written off the seat of Dunkley.
Well, that's interesting. Given that Corangamite is one of the most marginal seats in the country, you figure that one gets all the attention. So why not raise your sights a little bit higher and visit all of them? I mean, clearly it's impossible to visit every seat you hold, but you should certainly try as hard as you can. I'm not sure how far Dunkley is from Corangamite, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if we happen to see the Prime Minister again before this campaign wraps up on the 18th of May. But surely he could make another trip back to Victoria before this is all over.
Yeah. Now, in terms of some of the campaign commitments, Sarah Henderson's committed money for this Torquay pool, 50 metres, and I think the funding is in fact contingent on it being 50 metres, because I was reading the quotes from Rose Hodge, and Rose Hodge didn't seem quite so keen on the pool. She said, oh, we've already looked at it and we'll have to revisit it. I suppose the Shire is concerned about the ongoing maintenance costs. Would that be fair?
Yeah, that is entirely fair. I think that's certainly a concern that the Shire has. I mean, it's all very well and good to drop a whole lot of money in the pool. I mean, obviously, Libby Coker from Labor has dropped a certain amount of money. Sarah Henderson from the Liberals has dropped a larger amount of money. And that's great. And you pair those commitments with the $10 million that the state government has already committed to the pool, and you've got somewhere upwards of $25 million right off the bat. And so you can do something with that, but that's fine. But neither of those commitments are going towards the ongoing maintenance cost. And the historical argument is that pools are notoriously expensive, firstly to build and secondly to run, which is why the Shire's initial moves in trying to investigate the pool and the model they used to set up to not only finance but also continue to fund the ongoing maintenance of the pool fell over in the first place, because ratepayers in Winchelsea, ratepayers in Warland, ratepayers in Anglesey and further out, even though they were paying less than ratepayers in Torquay, weren't prepared to pay rates towards a facility that was an hour away, if not further, and that they would never use.
It's a fair point, because it just goes again to the issues around how big the Surf Coast Shire is. So what benefits the people in Torquay may not necessarily flow through to Lawn, which is actually quite a long way from Torquay.
Yeah, exactly. And that was certainly, I always recall going to that meeting that the Surf Coast Shire ran with their model. And it was the most openly hostile public meeting that I've ever been to as a journalist. The mood in the room was toxic. As soon as the Shire started speaking, people from the Shire started speaking, they were almost howled down by people in the crowd and they lost control of the meeting very, very quickly. And I think they ended up wrapping up early. That's how much anger there was at the proposal that law and ratepayers put money towards the pool being built in Torquay.
So basically the general mood of the room was, no, we don't want it.
Yeah, absolutely, definitely not. No way in hell would be the way I would describe that. Granted, that was the better part of 4 years ago, so people's attitudes may have softened, and having all this federal money to actually build the thing on the table probably lessens the ability of the Shire to have to borrow money and thusly jack up rates or impose some sort of levy or whatever funding scheme they might come up with if they decide to go ahead with it. But I think it is probably worth the Shire, when it does decide to look at the pool again, and I think it will have to. I know that Rose Hodges said in her various columns and articles that they aren't going to look at the pool until after the federal election, and that's probably wise, given that there's about $5 million difference between the two candidates depending on who gets in the government. But when the Shire does get around to sort of re-examining the pool proposal, it's probably worth going out and consulting again, saying, right, well, we've got all this money on the table. We should probably do something with it. How should we best use it?
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of money on the table. There's no doubt about that. Have you been on the Shorten campaign, or did you pop up when, I think, Christina Keneally came on the Labour bill bus down to Anglesey the other day?
Yeah, that's right. I was unfortunately committed to a fairly heavily organised family lunch on that day, so I couldn't make it. But we sent our photographer, Peter Marshall, to take some shots. I was a little bit disappointed to hear that Bill himself wasn't on the bus. His face was on the side of the bus, but Mr. Shorten himself was. I think he turned up in Luna Park that day. But in any case, I'm sure Libby Coker was very appreciative to have such a very, 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 very big and very obvious sign of her party's leader and her party in general tooling around her electorate.
Well, you've got to have that because Corangamite is one of the key seats that they have to win, I would have thought, if they want to form government. So they'd be campaigning. Yeah. But again, the amount of attention that it's getting from the leaders, I just wonder, were you involved back in the 2013 campaign? Because I heard that there were rumours that Darren Cheeseman had sort of already ruled out Corangamite, or the Labor Party had almost written off Corangamite at this point in the 2013 campaign, whereas it seems now that both parties think it's still very much in play. So the internal party polling must say something that the nationwide polling doesn't.
Well, that's news to me on the 2013 campaign, but I would suggest that when it comes to when you're fighting for your political survival, and Sarah Anderson certainly is, and the Liberal Party certainly is, given that they are technically a minority government, so they actually need to win more seats than they have right now to sort of stay in power, let alone increase the majority. So if there's a seat that you can reasonably win, and the margin is, something less than 40 votes in Corangamite? I mean, it's not...
Yeah, it 30 may, or it, something, yeah.
It certainly would give Libby great heart to know that the margin is that close, and so it's a very live prospect. But at the same time, Sarah is still the incumbent member, so it's not like she has to to fight any harder than she normally would to hold onto the seat. So I guess it's still a live prospect until it's all over. I mean, everyone talks about sort of uniform swings, which is just ridiculous. I mean, because swings are never uniform. Swings are seat by seat. The swing in Corangamite in either direction may be different to the swing in Corio in either direction, or the swing in Wannon in either direction. So it's really going to be a seat by seat contest. So I'm not surprised that Corangamite is very live. Clearly it's a seat that Labor needs to win. Labor needs to win every seat that it can to form government, and likewise the Liberal Party needs to win every seat they can, have to hang on to every seat that they've got, plus win a handful of others just to sort of get back in front and sort of be the majority government.
Yeah, so interesting times ahead for a federal campaign, and I'll say it again, we've got our Corangamite Candidates Forum next Tuesday. We've almost sold out in terms of the seats available, and it's a free event, so we haven't sold anything, but in terms of the tickets available, not many left, and all the major candidates have said yes. I think the only person we haven't heard back from, or we've heard back from, but he's still on the fence, is Neil Harvey from the United Australia Party.
Okay, right. Are you having a candidates forum for Corio as well? Because I understand that was a source of interest for the Liberal Party, endorsing someone and dumping them, and then endorsing someone else in the space for about a week.
Yeah, we're having one on Monday, but we're just trying to work on that because obviously we only found out who the new Liberal candidate was on the weekend, so we're trying to reach out, and we'll have to see where it goes with that one, but the Corangamite one is definitely locked in. But yeah, it's a bit of a schmozzle there for the Liberal Party, but I did hear that there might be more to the story. It might not be that he was dumped just for calling Richard Miles a nice bloke. There might have been more to it in terms of issues breached there, but it just looks very disorganised, and Richard Miles can get away with saying that the Liberals are taking Corio for granted, because that's exactly what it looks like when pre-polling opens on Monday, I believe, and they're only just getting a candidate on. In fact, I don't even think he's on the Liberal website yet. At least he wasn't last night. So that says something, of course, but, you know, they're obviously focusing on the marginals.
I guess so. I mean, ideally, you would fight in every seat, everywhere, all the time, but there's only so much money going around, and this might not be true, and if he's listening, hello to the former Prime Minister, but I don't think there are any $1.75 million donations from Malcolm Turnbull coming into the Liberal Party.
No. Might be going to a few independents, but not to the Liberal Party.
Maybe so. Actually, speaking of election forums, there's one down here at Torquay tonight, I think.
Yes.
At 7:30, I believe.
The refugee one, yes.
That's on, the refugee one. So that'll be interesting to see who turns up and what they say. And there's also one being run by the Aries Inlet and District Association after their AGM, which is being held at the Aries Inlet Community Hall. I think the AGM starts at 3 on Saturday. And the various candidates of Corangamite have been invited to make some statements about what their policies and their expectations are about the Greater Shen Road and sort of the surrounding area from about 4 o'clock on Saturday. So that should be interesting too.
Should be. I might try and get down to it. My understanding is that Sarah Henderson won't be at the one tonight. They've invited her, but I don't think they've had a response. I don't know if she's going to the Aries one. So look, tonight it's going to be obviously between Labor, Greens, and I think Damien Cole speaking, I may go down. We'll see. All right. Well, maybe something to leave us with. What's happening in the local shire before we wrap up for the day?
Yeah. Well, interesting. Speaking of the local shire, so the remnant that the your listeners may recall, the Cape Otway Road, Australia, massive sporting precinct project that's being proposed to build out sort of Motowari Way.
Yes.
They've released the business case of that and the strategic justifications, and so this is sort of signaling the next step in the process. As I understand, this sort of stuff would only go ahead if the planning minister, because this has all been called in by the planning minister, because this is going to be a massive multi-million dollar project, and the Shire's basically kicked it upstairs to the state government to deal with. And the planning minister was only going to release all these documents for people to read and sort of start the whole public consultation process if there was strategic justification for this thing going ahead. And clearly there must be, because otherwise all these documents wouldn't be out in the open air. So I'm going through them even now as we speak. And it's very interesting reading. So, probably worth, checking out our newspapers on Thursday to see exactly what the documents might say about why this facility should be built, if it is indeed built.
All right, James, thanks for being with us. We'll catch up again in 2 weeks.
Thanks, Mitchell.
Good on you. Thank you, James Taylor there from the Surf Coast Times newspaper. We'll take a break at 14 minutes to 11. After the break, we'll have some live music from Georgia Howell, who has won an award for the Colac Otway Shire. From what I understand, she's going to play a couple of tracks for us to wrap up this morning from down here at the Apollo Bay Bakery on 94.7 The Pulse.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.